Some fierce winds have given us a bit of a winter preview recently, and if your house was breezy on the inside as well as on the outside, my guest today is here to help. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Home improvement expert Bill McAnally is here. He's been studying the latest developments in weatherization and energy efficiency. We'll talk about what he's learned and what the take-home lessons should be for all of us. We'll also be taking your calls. What's going on in your house? What are your questions as winter approaches? If you're contemplating a project, let us know what you'd like to know. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today, and he has been studying the latest developments in weatherization and energy efficiency. He's here today to pass on some of his newfound knowledge. And, of course, he's also here to answer your questions about your house, about any projects you're working on. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Bill, I thought you already knew everything, so this is exciting you've gained even more knowledge.
It, you know, my brain is so empty. I can put so much stuff in there that it's amazing. You know, I sat in that class last show. I was, you know, in some training over at Kirkwood Community College. It was Building Performance Institute. These guys teaching us diagnostics. You know, looking at all the things that happen in a house, and you know, I have newfound sympathy for all the students that I had over those years because, man, that was grueling sitting there for a week in class. Oh, you know, it was my forehead still has the impression from slapping on the table because I seem to doze off after like 10 minutes if I haven't had a lot of coffee. But
all right, well, so when you were awake, what did you learn?
Go on and on about right. that.
You spent a lot of time talking about diagnostics.
Yeah, a lot of this training was about was – okay, if we do something to the house for weatherization, how does it affect the rest of the house? So basically the week was really looking at especially combustion appliances. That was the big focus, like water heaters, you know, gas appliances, your ranges, your furnace, you know, especially if they were natural draft, you know, where they relied on the air from inside the house and combust and then go out the chimney or the flue. And, you know, what we're looking at is when we pressurize a house, what happens to it? And by pressurizing, we were using a blower door to depressurize the house and look at things. But then even without the blower door, it's amazing what you could do to make a backdraft or make a water heater backdraft. In some cases, because of the way that the ductwork was run in the house, that just moving some doors – like some rooms were under negative pressure, some were under positive pressure. So what that means is like when you go to shut a door into a bedroom, if you feel kind of air coming out of that room's under a positive pressure. So the ductwork may not be installed correctly. And we would go around and move, like, say, a bedroom door, and all of a sudden we could backdraft the water heater. And then that meant the combustion gases were coming in, you know, into our face, basically, as we're standing there at the water heater. And then you'd move the door, and then it started going back up. And so you were trying to find your worst case. So, you know, how often could this possibly be happening? So then you could tell the homeowner, okay, this is what you need to do. Well, first thing you come out, you need that carbon monoxide detector right now. But probably, one of the biggest things, that they really stress during the training is you have to air seal. And what you want to do is, especially in the attic, you know, we always, you know, and I've always said this too, you know, okay, let's put some more insulation in the attic, you know, and get more R value, more resistance to heat flow up there and keep your house warmer. But if you don't stop the air from escaping from the house and going through the insulation, there's a lot of other issues you can cause. One thing that happens is, let's say that we go ahead and just throw another foot of insulation up in your attic. And we didn't care about stopping any of the warm air coming from inside the house and going through where wires go up through the framing into the attic, and you know, maybe can lights, lights, fans, all these little holes. If we didn't stop all that air, that warm air keeps going up. Well, now what we've done is, if we've added insulation, we've insulated the house better. So there's really not there's areas of warm air coming up, but we've made the attic colder in the winter. So now the roof deck is colder because we don't have all this heat escaping, because we've kind of slowed some of it down. And now all of a sudden we've got condensation on the bottom of the roof deck, and then we've got moisture where we didn't have it before because we had more, you know, we've kept the attic a little warmer.
And okay, so 2 months ago you would have said put more insulation in your attic.
Oh, yeah.
What's your advice now? What do you have to do?
Oh, we want to, but first of all, you want to stop that air from escaping the attic. So look in your attic before you put insulation down. You have to make sure to look at where all these little holes are, like wires. Like I said, wires that come up. You know, if you lift the insulation up in your attic, most houses in Iowa probably have fiberglass. If you pull the fiberglass up and look at it, first of all, if it's dirty, okay, that means there's probably air escaping. And it just carries dirt. Well, yeah, it's just acting like the filter that you've got down there at your furnace. It's just, you know, it's just a thicker one that you've got in your attic. But you're pulling air, so you want to look at where those wires are, you know, and you can foam around those. You can caulk around them. But then there's this, you know, we have knob and tube wiring in the old houses. You'll tell because there's little porcelain knobs maybe nailed to your ceiling joists or rafters. You don't want to insulate over the top of those, and because what they do is they get hot. So you have to build like a drywall box or some other enclosure to keep the insulation from getting on top of that, because they have to stay cool. And so, you know, and so then you can insulate over the top of that, but you've got to air seal first. And probably in Iowa too, one of our big things is, and I don't know why it hasn't changed a whole lot, but we have a tendency to take a bathroom vent fan and just throw it into the attic. And so you're throwing all this moisture from your bathroom and all this warm air in there, and you're expecting it to go out that roof vent. Well, that's not going to happen. It's going to condense first or get your insulation all wet. That has to be ducted right out the roof, and it can't go out the overhang either. We used to run this they'd come with this little white plastic vent pipe that, you know, it's collapsible. It was easy to sell because it's in this little 4-inch by 4-inch box instead of a long piece of metal pipe. Well, you'd drop it out into the overhang, and you'd expect the air to go out the soffit and outside. Well, if your attic was ventilated and your overhangs were ventilated, then that air would come up from the overhang and grab that moisture that you just pumped into it and take it back in the attic where it was before.
So maybe it's good news that we don't even have a vent in our bathroom.
Oh, boy, yeah. Yeah. Well, no, it isn't, but we can get into that later. But we want to make sure that goes out the roof and not out the overhangs, because we just have to, you know, really look at any place where you think there's air going into that attic and stop it. And then the insulation can do its job.
Okay. I saw recently someone with a big full attic in a very old house use an actual spray-on foam insulation mm-hmm. on the roof,
yes.
on the ceiling
yes.
of the attic, as opposed to on the floor. Is that something you've done?
Well, we were going to do it on the – right before I left the college, we were going to do that on the next house. And a lot of friends of mine have done that, and it's really popular out east. And I think you'll see a lot more here in Iowa, because that eliminates about every issue you can think of. Because it brings the attic now into it, makes it a tempered airspace. You don't have to worry about moisture issues, ventilation issues, and then you can possibly utilize that space. But it just gets rid of all these ills of ventilate, no ventilate, all these little things. And excuse me, for most shingle companies, the reputable companies, they don't have a problem with the warranty. They used to, but now they're starting to get into selling the foam, of course, now. So then, hey, yeah, that's great. But that is really coming along, and it's a very effective way to insulate your house.
All right. Well, I want to talk a little bit more about some of the things you learned at that conference in a few minutes, but we've got a bunch of people with questions for us, Bill. So let's get to that. Norma's on the line in Pella at 866-780-9100. Hello, Norma.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I'm wondering about a new furnace, and I'm having trouble understanding what size to get, what BTUs to get. One furnace installer says that I should have a 90,000 BTU. This is a 95% efficient. And the other one, a 70,000 BTU, 95% efficient. And I did a house calculation. My house is 2,970 square feet. That includes a basement, which only about half is exposed to the air, about 17-inch wide strip. The rest is buried.
Okay.
And then my glass, the glass area that I have is 28,172 square inches.
Okay.
And there's two exterior doors, one hollow core and one wooden. They both have wooden storm doors on. And the ceiling heights are 8-foot main floor and 7-foot basement. And there's one fireplace.
Okay.
And the insulation, the attic is 6 inches, and the walls are 3.5 inches.
Okay.
And I'm also wondering about the blower size.
Okay. What I would ask both of them is if they did a manual J calculation.
Just a minute. A manual?
J.
What is that?
Well, that's an actual calculation that they'll use the same numbers that you're using, a lot of the calculations. And to get a real, honest number, they'll have to do a manual J. And that's an industry standard to decide how large, say, the fan will need to be, how many BTUs you're actually going to be using. You know, they don't need
that. Is that done by measuring, or how is that
yes,
done?
Yes, yes. They will. If the heating person that you've got hired, if their eyes get glazed over when you ask about a manual J, move on to the next person. Because if they don't know how to do a manual J, then I'd be nervous about if they knew how to put in the ductwork.
Do you have any ideas about this?
No, because there's.
And with these new energy-efficient furnaces, I've heard some people say that they think they're not the air is just lukewarm.
Oh no! If they're put in correctly, they're very effective, and the air isn't that much different. But there's a lot to designing it correctly, especially even ductwork design. That's probably one of the weak points that we in Iowa, on average, these high efficiencies are only operating at about 59% efficient in Iowa because of ductwork design. So you'll want to ask them that, and that should take care of all your questions, is that manual J.
All right, Norma. Thank you so
Thanks,
much
Norma.
For your call. And you're welcome to join our conversation as well. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. You're listening to Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and I'm here today with Bill McAnally, our home improvement expert. Apparently, that's very funny.
Well, yes, because I found out over the break now that you have a friend that's much more of an expert than me, and so now you're laying me to the laying me to the wolves here. Well, my buddy says.
That is not true.
Well, I might have embellished a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. All right. Tom is on the line in Iowa City with a question. Hello, Tom.
Hey, Charity. I had a question. I've got a Four Seasons back porch, and I recently installed a wood stove. And as far as sucking cold air in to feed it, there's a little entrapment on the back of the wood stove that will suck air in to feed the wood stove. Should I crack a window just a little bit to let cold air in from the outside to feed that in order to not draw cold air in from the other places of the house?
Bill?
Yeah. Yes, you should. You should make sure that their air is coming in. Now, some of those stoves have an actual kit so that you can put a pipe that actually runs outside to draw in air.
And you said, did you say that you already have a cold air source into the stove?
I do not. I do not have a hose. I have thought about trying to make something that would be feasible. It's the back of the stove has a little a little lid, a little door.
Sure.
That will pull in oxygen or air to feed the stove. And I thought maybe it would be best to pull in a little bit of cold air somehow.
It would. Because unless there's an oxygen depletion sensor on the stove, especially on these little three seasons rooms, and if you made it halfway tight, you could be taking a pretty long nap if you didn't have more air coming into that wood burner.
That's what I was afraid of.
Yeah, because especially when you look at if they're really roaring, and then you look at the size of the flue, and then you compare it to the little hole on the back of the stove and where the oxygen's coming from, those are pretty scary.
Yeah.
I would get a hold of the manufacturer and explain everything to them and kind of lay it onto them as how they feel that should be ducted and document who you talk to, what time, and when.
Okay, thank you kindly.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, Tom. And Tom brings up a subject that we were talking about before the show as well, something that you learned quite a bit about recently, and that's that a lot of people are having problems with their new additions. What kinds of problems are you seeing?
Well, especially we've got, since last month, we got quite a few calls on people that had kind of the same situation as Tom, but they had three-season porches, but they were using their existing heating and cooling systems, for that porch, basically making it into a four seasons. What they're running into is they just weren't able to keep that room warm. You know, of course, there's a lot of glass usually in them, but some of the ductwork that was going out, if it's going from the house and it's going underneath the floor in the sunroom, and it's probably enclosed because underneath the sunroom they'd usually enclose it with either plywood or metal. But if you're going 10 or 12 feet out and that floor is sticking outside, it's just like an uninsulated wall, only laying horizontal. So if that ductwork hasn't been insulated very, very well, and I don't mean just the flex duct, you see this black, the common name is flex duct. It's an insulated kind of double layer plastic with wire around it that you extend out because it's easy to put in, and it's insulated. Well, it's only insulated to about an R5 or maybe even an R8. Well, why would you expect your attic to be insulated to an R49 or your walls to an R20, but this ductwork is only to a 5 or 8? It doesn't even make sense. So you're really going to have to take a look at how that was installed, make sure that piece of ductwork that's taking is probably going to the outside wall is sealed, and the cavities, that whole floor system is insulated. And the best way to insulate that is either use fiberglass or cellulose or foam, spray foam in between the joists, but on the bottom of the floor joist before the covering is put on, is put 1-inch extruded polystyrene on. You treat it just like a wall. Yeah, because you don't want any cold transferring through the wood. And you have to really air seal those very well. I think we're going to look at one today. And then there's another person called in. Theirs is only a foot off the ground. And so they've got a musty smell. Well, if it's only a foot off the ground, there's probably a lot of moisture coming up from the ground, getting into that floor. And hopefully it's not getting in around that ductwork, because then it starts spreading things around. So we talked a few things over the phone. Hope they're going to try it, and then we'll see what happens.
That sounds
scary.
Yeah, it does sound scary,
yeah.
Especially if you hire somebody to build a new addition on your house. And it sounds like we need to be asking a lot of hard questions anytime we hire somebody.
You know, there's a lot of hard questions to ask. That's a common area that's usually a failure. And another real bad spot is, with all these multi-level houses we have, sometimes we have an attic area that butts up against an interior wall. And just because you have a 12-foot, wall in your living room, part of it, 4 feet of it might be, bordered by the attic, and they forget to treat that like an outside wall. And they just throw a couple pieces of fiberglass and call it good. And all of a sudden you've got mold, you've got the cold wall. It's just, comfort issues. There needs to be still a lot of training done.
All right. We've got a lot of questions coming through on email right now, and our email address is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Pardon me. This is from David. He says, we have aluminum siding that has hail damage. What should we replace the siding with? Aluminum, steel, vinyl, or something else? And what would be the most energy efficient?
Well, when they're installed, they're all about the same as far as energy efficiency. It also depends if you want zero maintenance. I would probably go with, probably a steel, like a seamless steel. But when you take that aluminum off, do that yourself. Take it in. We took some aluminum off a building a few years ago with the students. We got $500 and some for that aluminum. So if take it off yourself and put it towards the, take it and have it recycled and put it towards new siding. I myself like either wood or cement, cement board. If it's put on correctly, you're not going to have to paint it, for 10 or 15 years if it's installed as to the directions. But if you want zero maintenance, and especially sometimes on resale, I think a lot of homeowners, especially today, we were talking earlier, nobody really has a lot of time to work on their houses, and so they'll look at steel or vinyl. I wouldn't use aluminum again, just because I think it's too soft. It's too easy to damage, and especially from hail.
And why do you prefer cement board or wood?
Well, I like the paint, and if I want to change the colors, I can, and it's just me. I just haven't got around to liking vinyl or steel that well.
All right, we've got another question. This one's from Jeff. And he says, we have a room that has a padded backed carpet that was either sticker backed or glued to what we found out is a hardwood floor, but I don't know what kind of wood it is. It looks like a common wood floor used in decades past. When I pulled up a small area in the closet, the carpet came up, leaving phone padding, which was difficult to pull up, and there's hardened glue still stuck to the floor. What are the correct steps of pulling up the carpet and restoring the hardwood floor? That's a lot of work.
That's an awful lot of work. And on that one, I would call a professional flooring person on that, because some of the chemicals that are used to try to get the adhesive off of the floor. I know there's some simple homegrown. If you go to some of the green sites, they'll find some chemicals that are non-toxic, but. You can also cause some problems with the flooring underneath it by letting these chemicals, no matter what they are, down into the seams. On this particular case, I'd pull the carpet up, scrape off as much as you can by hand, and then get a hold of a professional flooring restorer, because you're probably going to have it sanded down anyway. And you don't want to put a chemical or moist, anything that makes it wet that might affect what they're doing. You don't want to end up bleaching it or discoloring it. So especially if it's oak, that's where you want to get a professional. I mean, I've tried refinishing floors, and there's a real knack to it. And, you can do it yourself, but I tell you what, and from past experience, you stop for a second to turn your head to talk to somebody with that sander, and you can still spot that, 10 years later. So, I would take that route first.
All right. James is on the line in Iowa City. Hello, James.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
My call.
Yep.
We've got a house that's about 30 years old, and a previous owner had remodeled the basement. And to one of your previous callers talking about a bathroom vent, they in this downstairs bathroom, basement bathroom, they just put the vent up into the joist. It didn't go anywhere other than about 2 feet past the fan.
Okay.
So we remodeled the bathroom, and we thought, well, we need to do this the right way. And it is an outside wall, so within 3 feet from the fan, they could, we can drill a hole out through the wall.
Sure.
To get it vented outside. Is there any downside to that?
Not really. You're doing it right there. You're getting it outside. And the one thing about it is if you go out that, you just want to make sure you're going out that band joist, that you get a very good hood and insulate that pipe so that you don't get any condensation around the pipe, if in case you get some cold air coming in and dripping down, get a good commercial vent for that. You're far enough away down at the bottom that that moisture is just going to go outside, just like you see for the your high efficiency furnaces and everything else. It's not going to make it back up in the attic, causing the issues. Now what you're describing is surprising. How many times people do that? Out of sight, out of mind. And you're doing it just right.
And is the flexible, it's not even insulated hose that came with the kit with the fan, is it okay to use that, or should we use solid metal?
Use solid metal pipe, and then if you can slip that insulation over the top of it, that make it even better.
Okay, thank you.
You bet.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, James. Our number is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Another email question. This is from Mike in Iowa City. He says, my mother lives in a large two-story home. However, she spends most of her time in only three rooms on the main floor. Are there any good options for heating only those rooms, either by using a space heater or shutting off heat to the rest of the house?
I'm not a big one for shutting off heat to the rest of the house because it just causes a lot of structural issues. You can just adjust the thermostats. You can have someone come in and say damper down some of the ductwork and not let as much air go up. You can do that, but it's really a comfort. It's a comfort issue. I know you're only living maybe in three rooms, but eventually you're going to be going into the rest of the rooms and it might be time for an upgrade on your heating and cooling system because the whole house should be basically the same temperature. There's just a lot of we don't know, sitting here, we don't know what the moisture level is in the house. You could possibly go ahead and let some of the rooms cool off, and then all of a sudden you have condensation issues in other rooms in areas where there's not enough airflow. Kind of treating part of the house as a separate envelope from the rest of it gets into a lot of problems that may be unforeseen until you do it. That's why I've never really liked that idea at all. If you're just staying in one room, maybe look at a small electric heater. I wouldn't spend $500 on a special one that some well-known talk show host tries to sell you. There's ones that are just as effective. Just make sure that they have like a tip over. Make sure they're just electric, no fuels used whatsoever on them. But just make sure that if they tip over, they're safe and they'll shut off. There's just make sure they're like UL listed.
So if they wanted to keep the house at say 50 or 55
sure.
degrees or something like that, and then heat one room or a couple of rooms warmer.
Yeah.
Does that make more sense to you than trying to redirect all the air?
Yeah, yeah. There's just so many issues when you get into that, and it depends on every house. Every house is different, and every homeowner is different. You can have a tremendous amount of moisture with one homeowner, and one homeowner keeps it very dry. You probably wouldn't run into any issues if you did let the rest of the house go to say 45 degrees. I don't know why you would. But there's also, on especially older houses, you may just be just skimping by right now with maybe having some plumbing not freezing by keeping the house very warm. You drop that down, say 20 degrees, that you might not have that buffer anymore, and then you might start seeing some freezing with plumbing. There's a whole lot of issues that can possibly be going on.
All right. Well, I'm sure that's not the answer Mike was looking for.
I know. I'm sorry.
You're in the business.
That's the one you wrote down for me to say. How's that?
Delightful. Passing the buck there.
Yep.
Let's see. We've got Glenda on the line in Des Moines next. Hello, Glenda.
Hello. My question is, we're looking at a new house, and the house is 1,675 square feet. And it has a metal beam in the basement. And I've always seen those metal beams go clear across the whole basement.
Mm-hmm.
This one only goes part way. And then underneath the metal beams, they have the metal poles that come down.
Sure.
And then it changes to wood. And then they have an opening. And then the wood, it's like... they've taken like triple two-by-fours and tripled those as the support. And then the rest of the house is just, not even a – is just a wood support.
Okay.
Well,
it all depends on what kind of a load that they're carrying. That's is this a manufactured home?
No, it's a brand-new home.
Okay.
A wooden
Okay, just a stick-built home.
Yeah.
Sometimes that does happen where you'll be going, say, from wood support wall into the basement, and then you'll have a beam because maybe the beam is carrying a lot of load up above that beam. Every house has different, they call them load paths, where weight is transferred down from up above, and then it transfers down to something else, and then that has to carry it to other certain points. Without looking at the actual design, it almost sounds like this person has designed this, because otherwise they would have just went with wood wall all the way through or steel beam, make it easy. But if they've put a beams in some place and then wood framing others, it sounds like they've actually, thought it out and, probably have some engineering behind it.
Okay, so you don't think that was...
No, I mean, it doesn't sound like they've made any mistake, because, if they put a metal beam in there, those are very expensive. So, I'm sure that, they've had the calculations done on it.
Okay. Okay, that was my question.
Okay,
then.
Sure.
Thank you.
You bet.
Right. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
For your call, Glenda.
Thanks. Bye.
You can join us with your questions. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today to answer your questions. We'd love for you to join us. You're listening to Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. I'm here today with Bill McAnally, and we are talking home improvement. At least that's what we're talking about when we're on the air, as opposed to between breaks. And we would love to hear from you. If you have any questions about your home or any projects you're working on, Bill is here to help. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And one of the things that I know you wanted to talk about today, we've talked about a little bit at the beginning of the show, the fact that because of the way our homes are sealed, we can run into problems with carbon monoxide that we really aren't aware of.
Right.
But you consider attached garages to be a real danger source.
Yes, they can be a real threat. If we're especially if we're looking at that door that separates the house from the garage, if you're going to have a door that fits the the absolute best that you can get, it should be that door right there. We want to try to keep the carbon monoxide gases that we have from starting our vehicles from getting into the house. So that's one of the reasons. I know fire codes are another, but that's one of the reasons they like to have that wall between the garage and the house. If either that drywall, it should be drywall, that goes all the way from – covers that wall between the garage and the house all the way up to the roof, or else have the ceiling in the garage drywall so we can't – and it can't get that carbon monoxide into the house. The worst thing you can do, start your vehicle, then raise the garage door. I mean, what you want to do is open the door, start the car, do it in that sequence, and get the car out as soon as you can. Let it warm up outside. You do not want to have that car warming up inside the garage. And some of the designs we're seeing is they'll have ductwork from the furnace that goes into these garages, especially if they're underneath the house. You kind of have a drive under or something. The ductwork for the garage is on the ceiling. Or the ductwork for the house is on the ceiling of the garage. So you go into the garage, you can see the metal ductwork. Well, that's where the return air is for the furnace. So if you start your car and the furnace kicks on, now you're pulling air out of the garage into your house. So you really need to have someone take a look at that. That just is really a scary issue, and especially when it starts getting colder.
Is there an age of home that we would be more concerned about?
Nope.
No, it's always a problem.
Yeah, and probably one of the best investments you can make there is to put, especially on newer homes, is put a wall-mounted exhaust fan. And some of those are motion-sensored so that they'll kick on when somebody comes in or the vehicle comes in and stay on for a period of time. They not only take out gases, but, we drive around, let's say, with Dennis's forecast, okay, let's say Saturday night we get ice and water all over our vehicle. We drive into the garage. Well, then that moisture's got to go somewhere. And if it gets real cold, sometimes it'll freeze your garage door down, or you know, you'll see frost all over the place. So if you have a fan that takes the air out of that garage and takes it outside, it eliminates a lot of moisture issues too and comfort issues in your garage.
All right. We have a lot of people waiting to ask you questions. So we've got Dave on the line from Ames next. Hello, Dave.
Hi, Charity. Hey, I became a fan of yours years back when you were on in the morning, and it's wonderful to hear you back on the radio again.
Oh, well, thank you very much. It's very good to
be
back.
Oh, man, that was smooth. Okay.
Now the question where you're going to break my heart. I've got a house that's mostly on a slab and a very cold bathroom. We don't even have a vent to heat the bathroom. For some reason, that was never part of the system.
Okay.
Anyway, this room can get chilly, of course. I was considering putting down cork flooring to make the floor a little more user-friendly. Do I need to take the old linoleum off of the cement? It seems to be perfectly bonded with absolutely no problems. And again, just wondering if I can go in and get away with just putting cork right on top of the linoleum on the slab.
Well, if you really want to make it comfortable, I would look at those small radiant flooring systems for bathrooms that you can lay down there, mount underneath your cork. Have you looked at those yet?
No, I haven't. How do you feed the power to that?
Well, they're just
run off of?
They're just a real thin mat, and they're used a lot underneath ceramic tile.
Okay.
And I would is go ahead and go to you can go to any a store that sells flooring, and then ask them about the radiant flooring mats that you can put underneath your kitchen floor, and then they can tell you exactly how that cork should be put down so that it works with the radiant, because then you're going to have this. There's nothing better than radiant floor heat anyway, but especially in a bathroom. You know, if you step out of a shower and, oh, my gosh, you step on a nice warm floor and that warm, you know, warmth, oh, boy, you know, you're gonna love that. So I would do that if you're going to do the cork. And if you have the warm floor, then you can go with anything you want. You know, I mean, if you want ceramic tile down, that works great with the radiant floor.
Okay, that sounds real good. I'm going to have to look into that.
There we go.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, Dave.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. I could just imagine my bathroom floor covered in cats. They would love to have radiant heat from the floor.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, next we've got Paul in Norwalk. Hello, Paul.
Hi. Great show. You talked earlier about insulating in the attic, and we have our house was built in 1892, completely redone about 20 years ago with a new basement and everything. But anyway, it's got some blown-in insulation in the attic. And should you take that insulation out, or if you put the foam in on the ceiling in the attic, or do you just leave it in there?
Oh, you can just leave that in. Yeah.
Okay.
Do you have is there a wooden floor up there right now in your attic?
No, it's just joists.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I would just go ahead and leave the foam in there. If you're gonna if you did have a wood floor, there's some other options to go, but. Yeah, just leave it in there. If nothing else, it'll help a little bit, and then it'll be a lot quieter.
And then what is step two after that, if that's the high priority to do that? Well, we have they put a new basement. They added an addition on, about a third onto the house, and then put a new basement, poured concrete that's insulated on the outside up to ground level.
Oh.
And there's no insulation. Would that be the step two to insulate on the inside?
Oh, So they insulated with foam on the outside of the ground level, and then they cut it off at the ground.
For the basement. Yes.
Okay. Well, my first thing would do is go up there and put that foam back on, and then cover it or insulate with foam on the inside. The best, you know, it's really neat is for Iowa, the best thing we can do is insulate just the outside of the concrete. Because what happens then is you've got this huge thermal mass on the inside that once it's warmed up, it helps, you know, keep the temperature even inside the house. But it eliminates a lot of issues. The only, of course, for Iowans, how are we going to cover that little bit? Well, there's probably hundreds of products out there now to cover foam up. That's just one pet peeve that just
drives me nuts is when you try, you know, the place you need it the most is right above the ground, and then it's cut off. So if I were you, either put that back and cover it, or put 2 inches of foam on the inside of your foundation, like extruded polystyrene, which is like the colored type foams, like blue, green, pink.
Oh, okay.
And then you can do whatever you want with it.
And what are those? I mean, I just sort of picture cheesy, plastic bricks or something as what they are. You know, what
oh yeah, that, I've like. Used what those same ones. Yeah, yeah.
If that's what you want.
No.
There's some other panels out that are out there now too. You can, you know, if it's, it also depends how much is sticking out of the ground.
Different parts, it's more or less, I would say, from about 10 inches to 2 feet.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, you can nail-ite. It looks similar to that cheesy brick you're talking about. I know exactly what you mean. But there's a nail-ite panel, plus there are some foam now that have the have a gravel, kind of a rock finish to them. But, you know, but then you've got to do some flashing, and there's a lot of detail work. And so, you know, if you don't like some of the looks, then just go ahead and put the 2-inch foam on the inside.
And then that's floor to ceiling, or
yes.
Floor up above ceiling. Right?
Yes, and
then
between
the joists.
And in between the floor joists, cut pieces of that 2-inch foam, stick it between the floor joists, and then caulk around the outside edges of the foam.
But then you must use drywall on the inside,
yes,
of that, right?
Yeah, for fire. Yeah, but you can stud it up, or they make metal sound channel, commercial sound channel that we've attached to the foam too. There's a lot of details, but you know, if you go ahead and just, you know, frame it 2 foot on center with, and you can wire and make it, you know, beautiful room.
All right, Paul. Good luck with that. Thanks so much for your call. We have more questions on email as well. Lots and lots of questions today, Bill. You're in demand.
Oh boy.
We have this one.
They're all saying hi to you though, so don't. You're trying to make me feel good.
We have this one from Jessie in Des Moines. She says, I have a mostly steep roof with newly replaced shingles, but there's one spot with zero grade. The shingles are awful in that little spot, even after being recently replaced. I don't know exactly what you meant by awful, but is a steel roof an option for just a portion of the roof?
Yes, you can. Or shingles aren't meant to be put on any slope less than a 3 and 12, which means for every 12 inches you go horizontally, you have 3 inches of rise. So then you would have to go to a flat roofing product. You can either go with a metal, but there still has to be a little bit of slope for metal, or you're going to have to go with like a rubber roofing product.
All right. And MJ sent us an email. We live in an older home that has stucco as part of the second floor outside walls. We're having some water problems because of small cracks in the stucco. I can't find a contractor in our area to replace or repair that. Is there anything that we can do to seal the whole stucco area and eliminate the small cracks, maybe something to paint or spray on?
There are some products that that are made specifically for stucco. They're sealants. But one thing about stucco is just designed to breathe. It's designed for that vapor to go back and forth. You're actually going to have to really look and find a person that's like a plasterer, and they're almost all my age or older, so they're hard to find. But to find someone that can work on that stucco, you're just going to have to really do some research. I would look up, just like Google, stucco renovators or stucco repair. I would do some searches on that, and then to type in contractors as well. There will be some here in Iowa, I know, but they're just hard to find. They're
all
so
right.
Busy, they don't really need to be advertising.
All right, Kathy's on the line from North Liberty. Hello, Kathy.
Hi. I have a septic system, and the soil pipe freezes over in the wintertime.
It does.
Yes,
okay.
And I wondered if when it gets really, really cold, do you have any suggestions with that? I've asked numerous people and gotten very little.
How deep is that? The pipe?
The pipe?
Yeah, the pipe that freezes. Is this under the underground pipe you're talking?
Oh, no. This is the one that goes out the roof.
Oh, that goes out the roof.
It goes out the roof, yes.
Oh, okay.
And it freezes over, and we had this with our old house that was a septic system as well.
Well,
it's when it gets very, very cold that it happens, and
you know, we've climbed up on the roof and poured hot water down it to unfreeze it. And
well, what happens is they're supposed to be change sizes. So, like, if it's a 3-inch pipe, it has to, and I can't remember the codes on it, but like if it's a 3-inch pipe coming from the house inside the attic space, it has to change to a larger diameter to, uh-huh. so that those things don't happen. So get a hold of the plumber, and then they can go ahead and to go to a larger size pipe, and that would probably
so
take
that,
care
that
of it.
So that should happen in the attic and not above the roof.
Right, right. It's got to be in the attic.
Not above the roof.
Okay, it's got to be in the attic. Yeah, you want to change that larger size, larger diameter.
Okay.
So, yeah, have a plumber take a look at it, and they'll be able to calculate the size for you.
All right, thank you.
You bet.
Thanks a lot for your call, Kathy. And I think this will be our last call today. Carol on the line from Dubuque. Hello, Carol.
Hi. Hi, Charity. Hi, Bill.
Oh, well, thank you. Hi.
I have a 50-year-old home in Dubuque, and it has a walkout lower level. And it's already heated with vents that come from my furnace, but as you know, most of them are in the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I like to do to warm up the space in the evening, because our family room is there, is a vent-free gas stove.
Okay.
And I passed it by the city engineer with permitting process. It's a quite a large space. It's over 500 square feet. And I'm wondering, is there anything that I should know? I know that I have a carbon monoxide monitor near it. Is there anything else I should plan on?
As long as it's a direct vent gas furnace, or, you know, a power vent?
Well, this is an additional vent-free stove that I'm going to use as an insert in my fireplace. It's
okay.
A huge fireplace. I have a regular gas furnace. It's
okay.
All vented. But this one will have no vent.
So it has no vent.
That's right. It's called a vent-free.
Yeah, I personally don't really care for those at all because there's combustion taking place. And gases have to go somewhere.
Okay.
I wouldn't use those at all.
Okay. All righty. Well, thank you for your help.
You bet.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks a lot for your call, Carol. And I think we have time to get to one last email. This is from Dave in Des Moines. He says, I have a story and a half house built in the 50s. Last fall, when I had the house re-roofed, I had the contractor install a roof vent right above the bathroom with the intent of installing an exhaust vent in the bathroom, venting to the outside. Before I was able to install the exhaust vent, we received a significant amount of snow and ended up getting a snowdrift in the attic. Was it a mistake putting this roof vent in, or did I get the drift in the attic because I didn't have the exhaust vent hooked up?
Yeah, there's something wrong there. You shouldn't have any drift at all whatsoever in there. You're going to have to check everything to make sure everything's connected up correctly. There shouldn't have happened.
All right.
So that's pretty neat there. Nope, something's not hooked up right.
So he shouldn't just go build a snowman.
No.
All right. Well,
chunk of coal. Heat your house.
All right. Well, Bill, thank you so much for coming today.
And if they have any more questions, be sure to call that answer line.
All right. Why don't you give us the answer line and the email address as well?
Okay. Yeah. The answer line at Iowa State Extension, because they usually give me calls on this, is 1-800-262-3804 or email at answer@iastate.edu, because then they just pass them on to me, and so then we can answer them in between our shows.
All right. Well, thank you very
much.
Thanks,
Charity.
Thanks for being here.
Hi, Mom. She gets mad if I don't say hi.
All right. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. By the way, that was Bill McAnally, our home improvement expert. Production assistance today from Christina Sarnelli. You can podcast or listen on demand to Talk of Iowa anytime at iowapublicradio.org. And, of course, you can send us email anytime if you have suggestions or questions about the show, things you'd like to hear on the show. Send us email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe, and, of course, tomorrow is Hort Day. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.